Is this world the best that God can do, or are we looking for a better one? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on glimpses of our God, and our theme for today is the Bible and Christendom. Conversation partners are two members of the Walla Walla University of Theology, Slavko Stefanovic, Old Testament, Paul Dibdol, Mission. So, let me come to that issue. Christians believe that God has a better world coming. How do we live with that hope at the same time that we take care of this one? Now, we talked recently about creation care, but now history says this, if I understand it correctly, this world is not the best that God can do. There's a better one coming. Is that too scary to put it that way?
No. I don't think it's too scary. Maybe it's the best that God could do given the way in which we have responded to Him. But certainly, I'm looking for a better one, okay. and I think my fellow Christians would be united in that hope, yeah, for a better place.
Yeah. At the end of this quarter, we will be talking about the second coming. So we will talk about that particular concept. But the idea of history here, and there seems to be a significant contrast, and I'll just give a brief synopsis here. In ancient times, the natural religions, the fertility religions, operated on a cyclical fact. And the great events, the transitions between the seasons, the equinox, spring and autumn, and the solstice, equinox when the day and night are equal, solstice where the standing still of the sun, the longest day, the shortest day, those were key times for festivals. And every year was the same. They weren't going anywhere. Whereas in Israel, they always had a goal for a better world in which they were looking forward to. It wasn't just every year the same. There was a goal. Now, are there any favorite Old Testament? Maybe this question goes to you, Stravko, first, since you're Old Testament. How does knowing some Canaanite cultural background help us to address our tussles with culture? What does that happen when you look at the Old Testament stories, what it reflects? How can that inform us today as we think? Now, let me just explain a bit more. Mm-hmm. Today's evolutionary world is also cyclical. Mm-hmm. It's not getting changing. You know, mm-hmm. You just die and born again, die and born again. So in some ways, our modern world with its evolutionary model is remarkably similar to the old Canaanite pattern, mm-hmm. where nothing ever changes, you know, mm-hmm. every year, year in and year out. Now,
plus, on the top of that, I would draw another parallel, and that is where the divine element is a part of those cycles. And basically, the believers, it is their duty somehow to, through a special group of people like prophets or priests, to manipulate the divine element to the best of the advantages of the population. So the prophets and priests are there to do the necessary manipulation to get a divine will on the side of the people. And the kings and other powerful people, they had a way to give incentives to the prophets and to the priests. You know, let's say they would pay them for doing it and so on. So the divine element was a part of that cycle to serve the people. And that's where I find it radically different from what we find in the Bible, that the Lord is the Lord of history. He marked definitely the beginning of the history of his people, revealing to them where he was leading them, the principles by which he operates and so on. So is he involved in the history of the world and God's people? The answer is yes. Does he stay outside of it? And the answer is also yes. Where I find Baal, for example, Hadad, the Canaanite storm god, very much being part of it in order to be manipulated, uh-huh. by the people and strong in the society.
Now, one of the intriguing things, and maybe we can talk about how this might apply, is that the festivals, the Canaanite major festivals, happened at the equinox in the spring and the fall. And as I understand the stories from discoveries and archaeologists, that the word was that Baal came to life in the fall if you did everything right. And they had male and female prostitutes and went through all these sexual orgies because Baal had to come to life. Then in the spring, Baal died. And that was why there was no rain in the summer. He was considered the great storm god. And one of the most important stories we want to talk about this that illustrates how this happens is the story of Elijah on Mount Carmel. But let's first of all look at what happens in the cycle of festivals in the Old Testament. In the spring, when they were celebrating the death of Baal, you might say, Israel had a festival about the same time, mm-hmm. connected with the Passover. But the mm-hmm. Passover is a celebration of a historical event, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but at the same time. It's as if while the other people are having a Halloween party, we're going to have one at our church, but it's going to be a good kind. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then in the fall, instead of celebrating the rebirth of Baal, the fertility festival in Israel was a festival of the harvest of booths, which celebrated the entry into the land of Canaan. Yeah. See? Yeah. So does that help us to understand how we should relate to culture and maybe say, well, yes, but, mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. substitute something?
Yeah. Now, missiologists will talk about functional equivalence.
Uh-huh.
There are key parts to the social life, the social structure, key markers. Often there, you know, rites associated with life passages and you know becoming an adult or getting married or associated with death, and you can't go to a culture and just those kinds of rituals will generally be religious in nature, and you can't come and say, "Oh, that's the wrong religion. Therefore, we can't celebrate that. We can't do that." You have to provide something with a different kind of meaning, but yet providing meaning at the same time. So I think of the church that I'm most familiar with. We have baby dedications. We don't baptize babies, but we still bring young children before the Lord and pray a blessing upon them. It's a kind of equivalent to what some others do, but with a different kind of meaning. And I think we see that with these festivals, that while everyone else is celebrating, you don't just have to sit home and do nothing and feel left out. You celebrate as well, but you celebrate, as you said, some tangible event in history where God has acted in your behalf.
I think the technical phrase is that Israel's view of history was linear and goal-oriented. It was going somewhere, whereas the Canaanite was cyclical and natural. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going anywhere.
And then we look at that feast of Passover and how Christ turned it into the Lord's Supper.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Again, an event
mm-hmm. yes.
that was to come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, let's take a closer look at that famous Old Testament story here of Elijah on Mount Carmel. And it's rather intriguing, the fact that in the Ten Commandments, God says, "You shall have no other gods before me." Doesn't rule out those. And Yahweh didn't seem to be nearly as upset if Baal was worshipped up there in Tyre and Sidon. But the problem came was when Ahab married Jezebel, and she brought the worship of Baal and her fertility gods into the land of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So now, there are some remarkable accommodations or, you know, bridge building. Paul, what was the phrase you used?
Functional equivalent.
Functional equivalent.
Celebration. But.
So you go on Mount Carmel, and the test is the God that answers by fire.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Baal is always pictured with his favorite animal, the bull, which is a fertility, would be the same as rabbits and Easter eggs for us, see, a fertility symbol. And the bolt of lightning.
Mm-hmm.
He was the storm god. So you go right onto his territory and say, mm-hmm. we'll see who answers by fire.
Mm-hmm.
So is that Canaanite background, does that help us then understand how we can deal with some of the cultural issues today?
Definitely, because in reading ancient Canaanite passages and comparing to the Bible, to the Bible and biblical stories, one can find similarities. But then, on the other hand, there are distinct differences, and such stories are used to show the superiority of the true God over the other gods.
Yeah. Now, let's go to one other book I'll just mention briefly here, The Prophecies of Daniel, because every single one of the prophecies in Daniel lead in some way to restoration. The end of each one in Daniel, God's kingdom is established. Now, when you get to the New Testament, what are the key markers in the story of Jesus that would point to a linear concept of history that ties into that Old Testament? What would we say would be the key events there?
There are some parables of the kingdom that Christ talked about, the final judgment, God who dispenses justice at the end, the reward for the faithful is given. And basically the spreading of God's kingdom into the whole world. Christ clearly taught that in his parables, because he began his ministry by calling people to repentance, because the inauguration of God's kingdom was right there, beginning with his ministry.
If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again. There's that view of history of a return and restoration in the end.
And even the words go into the whole world and make disciples.
And then shall the end come.
That's right.
And so it's not this world, this is the best we can do. Now, we touched on that when we talked about creation care. The danger of some is, we just neglect the world. No, it's a both and. Mm-hmm. You take care of the world while you're waiting for God to come. Go ahead.
I just wanted, because of the title, of our topic for this week, the Bible and history, I believe that it would be useful for our listeners to clarify that when we say history in biblical sense, we are talking about the kind of history that is sacred, that is interpreted. I wouldn't like to see a confusion in the minds of our listeners. There has always been a temptation. Why do we use in schools, textbooks other than the Bible? If we have the Bible, that's going to be sufficient. So the focus on biblical history is God's kingdom. It's an interpreted history. If an event happened, how God perceived it, and so on.
Yeah, and I think we need to be careful that when you have multiple authors talking about the same event, the details may differ, but the focal point is always clear, and that's what we need to remember as we deal with the Bible in terms of history. Our time is up. Next week, we will talk about the promise of prayer. My conversation partners will again be Zdravko Stefanovic and Paul Dibdol. I want to thank them for their contribution. My thanks also to Chad Alfrenhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the good word, I'm Paul.
Listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.